Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along show.
Hello, and welcome to episode 187, brought to you by That's My Line, You Dickhead.
I thought it was 187 and not an undercover cop.
What?
The song?
It's a rap song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
187 on a motherfucking cop.
No, I only know the radio version.
Oh. I only know the adult
version. It's 187
version.
On undercover cops.
All right. So let's run through what we've been doing. Really, the only thing I have to talk about is...
installing moose balls in your moto tire?
I installed moose balls for the first time this week.
How many moose balls fit in there?
I don't know. I didn't count.
You didn't count them? You just tossed them in there?
Yeah, but I forgot.
I mean, he put the factory recommended number of moose balls in there.
Well, yeah. I did, kind of.
What? All right.
All right.
Okay.
So you put moose balls in. We need to probably be rapid here. You want to explain to listeners what moose balls are?
Imagine on your motorcycle you had full cush instead of cush core. So all cush, no air.
Yeah. So like it's basically a moose is a cush core that just fills your entire tire instead of air.
And Andrea, you may be a touch loud.
Sorry. I kind of yelled.
So yeah, it's all moose or all foam, no air. And the moose balls are cool because you can tune how it feels by subtracting or adding one, or a moose will deteriorate. So then you can like pop your tire off. Ha, ha,
so
ha,
is there any other, is there like a baby tube or something that goes in there or no?
No.
Oh, so.
Nope. It's just like little round foam bricks.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're asking, how the fuck do you get the tire on?
Yeah, it's difficult.
With lots of cursing.
Lots of lube.
Yeah.
Welding clamps.
You use welding clamps and lube and cussing and...
downhill tire levers.
Downhill tire levers.
Moto tire levers.
Yeah.
A hammer.
Do you have anything fancier than a bucket? Do you have like a wheel mounting stand? Or sorry, a tire mounting stand?
You know, here's the thing. I've seen numerous... like, use a bucket, use a bucket, use a bucket. I fucking hate the bucket.
You just use the ground?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, I didn't know if you had, like, an actual we have, like, a moto tire stand. Like, a tire changing stand.
I realized after I was, like, done with this, just before we recorded, I remembered that Tom has one, and then he lives, like, 30 minutes round trip, and I probably could have done it faster if I went and picked that up, brought it here, installed it, and then took it back to him.
They also make that like Anaconda machine or whatever that thing is called, and that thing's pretty dope. I'm probably going to buy one.
Yeah, I'm probably just going to get the regular style at some point, or just remember that Tom... oh, God damn it, Larry has one too.
Oh, God. All right, let's move on.
Anyways, that's a total pain in the ass, and the next time that someone complains about installing Cush Core, I'm just going to put some Mr. Wolf... moose, they call it moose lube, and 100% that shit is moose juice in my brain, and I'm just going to slap them with a handful of moose juice and go about my day. Kenny, what have you been doing?
Nothing. Yeah, I just had a kind of a short weekend since we last recorded. I did all my cool stuff in St. George last week, so nothing cool to report.
Andrea, what have you done that's cool?
I set some beaver traps out and didn't catch anything, and I worked at the bike shop 2 different days. So that was cool. It wasn't the greatest thing for my neck, but I got to...
What about your back?
My back was okay.
What about?
No. Just stop right there. We'll get to that when we read patrons. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. I couldn't work 2 days in a row, I know. So I worked like Saturday and Tuesday. And that was taking prednisone. We'll see how it feels when I am not taking prednisone, because I really just don't want to irritate my nerve anymore. It really sucks. Can't do shit. But we were talking about, do we want to go ahead and talk about my bike?
Mm-hmm.
So before the show, Matt and I were discussing, should I sell my Mayhem? Because I have no idea when I'm going to ride a bike again. And I have 4 bikes. I've got my fat bike, which I'm always just going to keep because every time I don't have a fat bike in the winter, I'm like, I wish I had a fat bike, and I might ride it like once or twice. So I'm just going to keep it. It's a really nice fat bike. Fat bikes aren't, there's no new fat bike technology coming out, right? So that's just going to be my fat bike for as long as I live where there might be fat biking around. I've got my single speed, which I love. And again, hardtails aren't really changing other than fewer of them are single speedable. So really like that bike. That's just my forever single speed as long as I'm going to ride single speed. And I've got my e-bike. And yeah, I mean, e-bikes are changing. But that's likely what, when I do start riding again, I'm probably going to start riding that because I can just like ride from the house and do gravel roads and stuff while I'm just kind of getting back into riding shape. But yeah, so I've got the Mayhem. And Spot being, I mean, it's a great bike and Spot's a great company, but being a smaller company that's very...
You're yelling again.
Sorry. Being a smaller company that's very...
You're still really louder than you were earlier.
Local, a small company that's very kind of just locally, regionally known. It's not going to really hold its value, but so it's like, well, maybe I should just sell it now. And I want something a little bit shorter travel, a little bit lighter. When I am ready to ride, you know, full on again. So why not sell it now and just kind of keep that money to the side to buy something fresh and new whenever I'm ready.
And you have a Mayhem?
But yeah.
What's the travel
Spot
on
Mayhem,
it?
130, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
150, 130.
150, 130.
Yeah, so it's,
and you want something less than that?
Yeah, a little bit. It just, you know, with like the new lighter travel, like the lighter, slightly shorter travel forks.
You want one of them downcountry bikes.
Yeah, something like that. Like a, you know, long travel cross country.
We'll record without Kenny. He just said downcountry.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Kenny.
I want something like that. So
fuck you right in the front of your helmet.
In the hot dog hole.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm going to sell that. But I had this thought also just as we started recording with the tariffs that are happening or about to happen, new bikes are going to start getting more expensive. Most likely, we don't have to discuss it for a long time, but that's the takeaway is new bikes are going to be more expensive. So should I wait a few months and then try to sell the Mayhem when people are like, fuck, these new bikes cost a lot. I'm just going to get something used because it's in really good shape because I got that frame. My old one had kind of a, it had something that looked sort of like a crack.
We talked about that really, really recently.
Yeah, I know. And Spot was like, well, you can have a new frame, the updated one for $1. So I got that. And since then, I rode it some, but, you know, that's when I started having like all my problems. And so I haven't ridden it that much. So yeah, I mean, it's in really good shape. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, should I try to sell it now or should I hold on to it and maybe someone won't try to like super lowball me on it?
So should we jump straight into politics and tariffs?
Very briefly, because that shit makes my eyes glaze over.
Well, we don't need to get that deep into it. The gist of this is most of the bicycle producing countries. So Vietnam is a big one. Cambodia is a big one. Taiwan's obviously a big one. Mainland China is a big one. And all of those, and I'm saying this very roughly, they're all hit with a total tariff these days of around 50%, which is nothing to scoff at. That's a pretty big deal. Some of them were sitting at like kind of 10 to 20% for a while, but now they're boom, jumped up to 50. So what does that mean? Well, at some point, shit's going to get more expensive. Nobody knows exactly when that's going to be. It's going to be really interesting to me to see who's going to make the first move in the bicycle industry to say, okay, here's the new prices. It is what it is. Deal with it. And also, it's so weird, right? Because everybody's trying to get rid of these old models now because all the new fancy stuff's coming out because we had such a stagnation for a couple of years because nobody cared during the pandemic about making new bicycles and new tech. So, god damn it. Like, I'll just tell you my stream of consciousness here. I'm ready from a buyer standpoint and all the other stuff that I do in the bike world. I was so ready for this year to be the last year of just all the stupid fuckery that's happening and for stuff to just even out and we can stop like, you know, raising prices, lowering prices, matching prices, Specialized doing weird shit online that we got to match and it doesn't make sense and they're out of stock of half the stuff and customers don't understand that. And oh, I was just so ready for that to all be done and over with, but that's not the case. We're going to have all the rest of the weird sales stuff going on top of like what in the heck is going to happen with tariffs. So I don't know what it's actually going to mean or timeline, but if this stuff sticks, this is going to be like a real deal. So what that means to me is eventually the used bike market is going to be hot. So maybe this is also a chance for people like the Pros Closet to, you know, Phoenix this shit and be super, super relevant again. I think just the used bike market in general will be strong. I think that shops that have kind of closeout bikes, if you will, I think that's probably going to be strong. That's my educated guess, but I don't have a crystal ball. So anyway, I'll let other people put their opinions out there. But Andrea, I think that even though with all that stuff said, I think the smartest thing you can do is try to sell your bike now. Just sell it, because trying to like time the market, if you will, that's just such a risk. Who knows? Maybe it will be hot and maybe you lost out on $500 or something that you could have gotten later on down the road, but you just don't know. So I think you should just put it on the market now. And I think some of the smarter people out there will probably start looking at used bikes right now because they're going to be like, wow, new bikes are going to be really expensive.
Yeah. Well, if anyone wants a Spot Mayhem 130 with, what's it got on, Eagle XX1? I think it has an XO rear derailleur because I replaced the old one.
No, you didn't. I took it off your bike.
And I'm still mad about it.
Don't get it twisted. Your McLeod derailleur still hanging on the wall.
It is.
So it has a Lyric set at, I said it was 150. It's 140 or 150. I can't remember.
I think it's 150.
And then you have carbon bars. You have some fancy like G2 Ultimate brakes.
Yeah, it's a really nice bike.
Let's see. And
that bike loves to jump.
You have... Don't know what wheels are going to go with it yet. So it has carbon wheels.
It's got Knox Teocalli wheels on it with i9 hubs.
Oh, God. My phone's on ring.
Yeah. Knox Teocalli wheels with i9 hubs. Matt White might want those, so it might have different carbon wheels on it, but it would have carbon wheels on it.
So does anybody else have any comments on tariffs or any thoughts?
Yeah,
I mean,
the one thing that we... I'm trying to think of how to... say this. I am not a smart man. You think I'd be better at making my brain juice turn into mouth movements?
Yeah,
for someone
that's
been
just start with some words right now, and then we can add other words later or change them around.
So during COVID, a lot of folks were like, "Oh shit, nobody's going to spend any money," and it turns out the outdoor industry just went abso-fucking-lutely bonkers.
Yep.
Because people couldn't do anything else. And again. For the longest time, I believe people were like, oh, can't take the family to Europe this year. I'll get a new gravel bike. And then next year, they're like, shit, still can't go to Europe. I'll get my new mountain bike. And they're like, shit, still can't go to Europe. I'll get my new road bike. And then they were like, cool, I've got all my new bikes I need. I'm going to Europe this year. And I think that really happened.
And oh, it 110% happened.
But I think it happened at all economic levels. Like, the person that couldn't, that, you know, isn't in that income bracket, they were like, well, I'm not going to the bar, so I'm going to buy a new hardtail this year.
Well, everything, you know, anything even remotely recreational that was not a vacation. So that is the entire gaming industry, computers, all that stuff was gangbusters. Tennis, golf, mountain biking, rock climbing,
pickleball,
everything you can imagine, right? I don't think there was a single thing recreational that didn't explode during COVID.
But one of the things that happened during COVID was the spice still flowed. Like, the stuff was still happening. And what this means is we don't know how far shit's going to get fucky here. So the flip side could be that, I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know, I'm not economically savvy enough to, like, articulate this, but, like, what happens when people get laid off at work? Because
say Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act.
Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act?
Boom.
I don't know what the fuck that is.
And then we can talk about that. See? Matt's smart.
No, where I'm going, though, like before we get into that, is what happens when, okay, for argument's sake, I work at a bike shop. Let's say people stop buying bikes because they have tariffs on them.
Sure.
So then I don't get to work as much, and like we cut hours at the shop, and then suddenly my groceries are more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not going to be just the bike shop.
Oh, no. These are all 100% possibilities. I think maybe what's different here is because it affects all goods for the most part.
And that's what I meant when I said the spice still had to flow during COVID. Like, not everybody, but most people were still working their asses off. And there was goods and services and commerce. And, you know, sure, everything was takeout for a while and you didn't eat inside.
Now, it did fuck, like, the travel industry, for example. If you worked at a hotel or at a travel agency, you didn't have a job anymore, without a doubt.
Right. But that was very, like...
That was, like, a sector, though.
Yeah, like, that's a sector. But now, most people's jobs will be affected. So, most people... In America,
well, let's say could be affected.
Most people in America could see a reduction in income, which means a reduction in disposable income. And a lot of people consider bikes to be disposable income. So, yeah.
Are we about to see the third Great Depression?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we don't need to get too deep into all this stuff. And I'm sure that Wikipedia's article on the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act is probably actually on fire right now. The number of people looking back to that and trying to draw a correlation between that. So, and for those people that don't know, that want a quick history lesson there, in roughly 1930, a bunch of, and you know, the Republican Democratic parties have changed kind of like what they mean over time, right? So like, don't take this, the Republican Party from 100 years ago is not what the Republican Party is today. But anyway, some folks decided that, hey, let's basically, we need some money as a country. Let's just bang up tariffs a bunch. So that was the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. Although tariffs up to that point had been super high anyway, if you go look at the history chart. So I don't think it was anything super unusual. It's really been the past, probably since the 70s, basically. From the 70s onward, most tariffs have been extremely low as far as what the U.S. levies on other countries. Anyway. Not to get into the weeds and have people's eyes glaze over. The correlation that people are making is what happened in the 1930s, we had the Great Depression. And it was like on the heels of the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. So some people kind of blame that for the Depression. It definitely was not the only reason for the Depression. The Depression was like very, very – lot of things all came in at the same time.
Multifaceted.
It was a definitely multifaceted thing. But the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act for sure did not help anything. So people are trying to draw a correlation there. Who knows? This is this is definitely an unprecedented thing. I just don't know what to think. I'm not smart enough or an economist to know what all the ramifications are. But generally speaking, I think Matt or Andrea, I can't remember who mentioned it, but generally speaking, the people that if this all goes through, the people that are going to be hurt the most are the actual middle class people. And or even lower class, because so all the stuff that's imported that's super cheap that people need to get because it's cheap. So kind of all a bunch of stuff that's in like a Walmart, for example, other than maybe some food, it's probably pretty much all made in China, right? And all that stuff is going to get more expensive. So that's going to really suck. And what's going to happen with the bike industry? Whew, big old question mark, right? Like this is a big deal. But I think it's also a really good point to think that this is not – this is so many different sectors that are affected, definitely not just recreation or the bike industry. So anyway, we'll see. I think that's all we really need to talk about on that, unless anyone
spot mayhem for sale.
Yeah.
Meat size, medium, nice parts, $3,500 shipped anywhere in the continental U.S. What'd you say, Matt?
Sorry, I ran to grab a seltzer water, shipped with your label.
All right. Do we want to get to the new shit?
Yeah, we should probably do new shit.
Avana claims the new Silva is the lightest full suspension mountain bike produced.
All right.
Okay.
What's it do? What'd it do?
It is 105 to 115 millimeters of rear wheel travel and designed for 120 or 134.
So that new Fox SL.
And let's
34
see.
SL.
Frame weight with a shock is 3.89 pounds. But I just want to throw it out there. If you look at this and you're like, wow, that looks a lot like that A-Cross 8 where that World Cup guy's bottom bracket just fell out. I mean, like the whole fucking shell broke out of the frame on the start line. Same guy made it. So
sick. Love it.
Going into bikes that look good and won't fall apart. Limited edition 40th anniversary ASR is so hot, I came twice.
Jeez, that's pretty graphic.
I'm just saying that.
Yeah, that's a cool look. I would like to ride something like that. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a tiny bit burlier than that. I don't know. I'll make that decision when it's time to make that decision.
The bitch is going to get a tall boy.
So I
have no idea.
I have a question. I am a recovering weight weenie. Is anybody in the world a weight weenie anymore, or is that just not a thing?
It is. However, I think that because we now live in the mountains, we don't see the weight weenies like we used to because...
You can't ride weight weenie shit in the mountains. Well, like, really ride
And also,
it.
Like, because in the mountains, we got other cool shit to do in the mountains. Like, when you're on flatland, you get kind of bored. And so, like, you know, you race your bike and then you're a weight weenie.
And I can agree with that. And you're a weight weenie and the penalties are lower. Meaning, if you're not asking the bike to do as much, the parts don't have to perform as well. So
yeah, that makes sense.
You know, a great example would be, I think, Richie had those super light XTR style or SPD style pedals, and they were light as shit. And then Andrea, when she first moved to Colorado, she sold a pair at 9250. I mean, I saw them being installed on a bike. And then the next time I saw that bike, it was getting Shimano pedals because one of them imploded on a rock strike. But when you don't have rocks to strike on, that doesn't matter.
Yep. Yep.
So
continuing on.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that weight weenie.
I think the way I would, I mean, personally, I would, if I were going to race a bike in the mountains, which I've done, I wouldn't pay so much attention to like the frame, the, you know, frame suspension, like that kind of stuff. As far as weight goes, like I would get what I need to be in the mountains and ride hard. And I would take chances on maybe like a lighter wheel set and maybe a lower tread rear tire or something. You know, like that's about the extent of weight weenie that I'm comfortable with for something that is going to be a racing bike.
Yeah, and I think if it was like a short travel bike, you would weight weenie like, you know, I have the new Motive brakes, they're four piston. I don't really have to have HS2 rotors, right?
Yeah.
Or if it was a bigger bike, you might say like,
Well, like I rode my old Spot Mayhem in the Mountains Revenge, like in the endurance race. And I just put lighter wheels and tires on it. And it was great.
Yeah, and I was going to say for an enduro bike, you might be like, I'm not going to get this 1400 gram Vittoria tire. I'm going to get this 1100 gram Maxxis tire.
Yeah.
Do you disagree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
So yeah, new ASR. It's really pretty.
Well, it's the same as the old ASR. It's just dressed up for 20th anniversary and
40th anniversary.
40th, sorry. And it's it looks good. It looks nice. I mean, I don't know how nice it'll look if you ride it really hard in, you know, 2 or 3 years, but it looks cool. If you're a Yeti person, there's only 200 of them. Get yours while they last.
I'm sure there's already one in Salida.
Oh, yeah. You know Sean's on one. Sean is the owner of Absolute Bikes, and they've been a Yeti dealer for a very long time. And he likes stuff like that that's vintage and nostalgic. He has a great appreciation for it. I didn't say that to be a smartass. I just know how he is and know he's probably got one.
So we should have done this new shit first. But Borealis has suspended bike purchases due to tariffs, so they're not going to bring in any additional inventory for this season.
All right.
And not to be mean, but when I read this, I was like, oh, Borealis still exists.
Yeah, like, me too.
Yeah. So,
you want to talk about that new Axis post?
Well, I was going to say, in other industry news, Yamaha Ha agrees to buy Bros's e-bike drive business.
By the way, is that April Fool's or is that real?
That's real.
Yeah, that was published March 31st.
That's really interesting. And we talked about Yamaha like ceasing North American sales or something to that effect using their existing stuff. And obviously that was we didn't realize at the time, but that was the precursor to them probably getting the IP, the intellectual property from Broza, I would assume. Or maybe they're just going to use the Broza name. I don't know which name they think is more powerful. But regardless, that's very, very interesting. And I wonder why Broza would do that. I mean, obviously things change and we have no idea how much money they make out in the automotive world. But I mean, Broza is not small potatoes in this game. Like maybe not quite as big as Bosch, but every single Specialized and a whole bunch of other bikes use them. And yeah, they had a couple little issues, but they're pretty darn good.
Well, I think we're looking at this from the bike industry, but I see this as Yamaha wants to buy some motor and battery IP for two wheels.
Yeah, and is that going to go over? Yeah, is that going to cross over? Man, I got so many thoughts, right? Is Yamaha going to make the same bonehead move that every other moto person made, like KTM going, people are buying these e-bikes. Should we make an e-bike? Yeah, I don't know. Get Bob to do it. He doesn't know anything about bicycles or whatever, but let him do it. He'll put like integrated giant screen into the handlebar or some shit and people will buy it because it looks like a Porsche. And then it turns out nobody bought it because they were fucking terrible. So I hope that Yamaha doesn't just think that they can make mountain bikes, if that's what you're getting at.
Nope. Where I'm going is, let's look at the big picture of this. Stark, and you were still staying in the bicycle world, but Yamaha quit selling bicycles in the U.S., right? They pulled out of North America.
And I don't know that they ever made bicycles. I think it was their like motor systems, right? Maybe they made bicycles.
Yamaha? They made e-bikes for sure.
They made e-bikes? I thought they just made drive systems. I thought they made mid-drives for the likes of Giant and some other people, right?
No, they straight up made e-bikes.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I knew a dude that worked there.
Oh.
But with that, maybe they were like, man, this website is for the U.S. only. How do I? Okay. Confirm. All right.
Their website is not great.
Yeah, their website's not working well. Surprise, surprise. But I wonder if they're like, instead of trying to sell e-bikes in the U.S., we should just buy Broza, and then we can make money in the bicycle industry by selling motors to fill in the blank.
Specialized and
whoever wants to buy them. And then we have all this great two-wheeled IP, so in 3 years, we can have our own Stark that is, I don't want to say based off of an e-bicycle, but they're like, man, they've got all this stuff figured out already on, like, battery management and modes and tunability of modes and you name it. Like, Broza knows a bunch more. I mean, Broza wouldn't just like say, hey, we're gonna start making fucking dirt bikes, right? But if Yamaha was like, I want to make an electric dirt bike, and they bought something that was already making two-wheel things go, that's got to be like a huge leg up on, you know, having a Stark competitor in 2028 or 9. Any disagreement there?
That's an interesting take. So you think they're going to go the moto route?
No, I think they're going to sell Broza products under the Broza name for the bicycle industry. And much like we say, like Trek and Specialized, every time they sell a Rip Rock 24, they have more money in their pockets to make the new Epic. I think they're going to make a shit ton of money selling e-bike parts and use the people that know how to make electric motors and source good batteries and work with vendors and all that stuff. They're going to buy those people, not in a slavery sense, guys, in a job sense. And all those people are going to be on the development team for a Stark with a Stark competitor with the money from selling all the bicycle stuff.
Are you ready for some 3D chess conspiracy theory?
Yep, go for it.
All right. I think Broza might be doing what they're doing to get out of their contracts with Specialized. As in, they won't be on they won't be on the hook to support any failed Broza motors.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know. Just saying.
All right. Can we talk about this new Axis Post now?
Well, speaking of things with motors in them, let's talk about the new E-Verb.
It's the same as the old one, except it's as ugly as the Fox one now.
The 200 millimeter one, 31.6 by 200, weighs 735 grams.
Okay, so from a weight standpoint, what is...
So that's the... one place I would go weight weenie, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do we know what the old one is versus the new one? Same travel, same travel? I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I'm not fast enough with the old keyboard clacker to figure it out. Matt, are you on it?
I'm not.
Oh, no. Shit.
I'm okay. Looking it up.
Okay. I was going to say, that was me lobbing it to someone else to do, and then nobody did
it. Oh.
Let's see. Here's an old one. And...
It's also tough, too. Like, are they including a remote weight? Probably not.
Weight, is it
a
battery? So here we go. Weight with battery. Let's find 31.6.
170 was as big as it used to be.
Yeah, so it was 31.6, and 170 millimeters was 704 grams with a battery.
And the 200 is now 700?
Yeah, it is 735.
Okay, so it's probably a few grams
lighter. With a battery, I don't know.
It sounds like it might be a few grams lighter, and I think it's maybe got simpler internals. I guess let's cover some other stuff on it real quick.
It does.
It has no longer a hydraulic cartridge, basically, is my understanding, that it's got some type of like air cartridge, and it's locked out when you're in full extendo mode. And if you're anything other than full extendo, it's really squishy.
Mm-hmm. It's a little squishy. It's not like fully up and down squishy, but it moves a little bit.
Oh, have you squished on one?
A long time ago.
Oh, okay. So
well, the
it's not like a noticeable, like you're not pogoing.
But the 27.2 Explore Post have had this from the start.
Yeah, yeah. So okay. I've had my hands on one of those.
What do you guys think about that? It's on. I don't know.
It's not noticeable. Like okay. you don't like you. If you rode one back to back, like let's say you rode. I had one on my on a previous bike. And when I switched to a rigid post, I noticed that the rigid post felt more rigid than the dropper post did. When it was, like, if I dropped it a little bit, like, if you rode them back to back, you would be like, oh, yeah, my dropper post does move a little bit compared to a rigid post at the same height. But you're not like, what are those old suspension seat posts?
Thudbuster.
Yeah, it's not like a Thudbuster or anything. It's subtle.
The Thudbuster also moves in a really weird direction where I rode a bike with a Thudbuster the other day without realizing it. I mean, I knew I was riding the bike, but I didn't know it had a Thudbuster. And Jesus Christ, it startled me.
I'm trying to be open-minded here. I think that maybe that's a good thing to have like a little bit of play in not the full height position. I don't think I have a huge problem with it. I just want to make sure it's reliable. The old Axis posts are definitely 10 times more reliable than any other reverb posts, which were the worst posts on the planet. But also, most people's Axis reverb posts have some squish in them, which is not supposed to be there. And obviously, that's fairly quickly. You can bleed that out fairly quickly using the little tool and everything. Totally understand that. But most people's are squishy.
And this one is supposed to be user serviceable without specialist tools other than just a very high pressure pump.
That's awesome. I do look forward to actually rebuilding one for the first time. And yeah, props to SRAM for making stuff easier to work on and hopefully more reliable. So hopefully that's a step in the right direction. Do we know how many dollars it costs?
I believe it was five in the 500 range.
550 with no lever.
Yeah.
Okay. That's also a step in the right direction. Better than 861.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. All right, we got to move on.
I have another one.
I have one other thing about this.
Okay.
The keyways are now plastic.
I wonder if that is for... I've seen a lot of scored up Axis posts, and I don't know if that is a product of someone getting unlucky and getting something stuck in there, or somebody straight up not servicing their stuff, or is it a piece falling apart in that Axis post and then destroying itself? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know. I've never seen one destroyed, but...
I've probably sent in six of them so far, I'm guessing-ish. And I think they warranty them, but maybe
definitely,
it might be the customer's fault. I don't even know.
When you're reassembling it, the brat little Kiwis will, they try to slip out sometimes. You kind of have to glue them in with grease. And I don't know, this probably makes it to where if you did, I mean, I'm sure they have other reasons, but it would definitely not scratch the post up and whatnot if you slipped one out accidentally and like slid the whole post into the rest of the seat post when you're servicing it.
I think what should happen is the people at 1UP should get with the people at SRAM and they need to put their shit together. So SRAM can do the little electronical bits and do it in a V3 dropper post. That's my wish.
You want that collab?
I want that collab. Can we talk about spokes?
Yeah.
Yeah, where do you find spokes?
We might have talked about this on a previous show, so remind me if we did. I cannot
talking
say
about the nailhead spoke.
I cannot say what bike I saw these on because it's not out yet. But I saw some new DT spokes. And the DC spokes are out. The bike's not out. And I just didn't realize that these were a thing. And like I looked them up on DT's site. I'm like, what the fuck are these? And I found
what
them on their site. They're called the Comp Light and the Revo Light. Did we talk about those? I feel like maybe we did. And I hate to repeat ourselves. And if we did talk about it, it must have been a year ago or something.
Dude, I don't fucking remember last week.
So anyway, we'll talk about it again. How about that? Because I now saw them on a wheel set. DT Swiss has a Comp Light. And a, not an aero light, what's it called? A Revo light. But basically, the aero light still exists. The Comp Light is basically a competition spoke that has been aero light smashed, but with a different die. So it's a 2.0 to 1.8 to 2.0, but it's got like a little bit of a flatter profile and like kind of a weird 3D looking thing going on. They're very weird looking in person. But I think maybe that extra little process of forging essentially will probably make them. That was the thing about aerolites is even though they're a 1.5 in the middle, that extra process made them stronger than a normal 1.5 round. So I think this is the same idea. And then a Revo light is like a 1.6 roughly in the middle. That's gotten this new special 3D weirdo treatment. So anyway, I saw some and they seem neat. So if I ever build another wheel set again in my life, which I just don't know that I'll ever have to because factory wheel sets are like pretty good now, maybe I'll use a set of those spokes.
All right, then.
Yep. And I'm seeing some more and more deg hubs floating around. And sounds like maybe a couple of deg hubs have some grease issues. Maybe kind of an EXP type problem. The EXP was definitely a machining problem, not a grease problem. So I don't know. I just get nervous about these other hubs. Like they seem so freaking fragile and it's hard to beat just the good old fashioned 2-star ratchet DT350 240 stuff from way back in the day.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can get that stuff figured out.
New Fox Float X2 shock.
Yep. There's a new...
That looks pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Talking about me being scared. Holy crap. I'm scared of that thing.
Why are you scared of it?
Because everyone's exploded. And Fox was like, nah, there's not a problem. And they're like, yeah, actually there was a problem. And everyone's like, oh, fucking shit. Replace my stuff. It's broken. And Fox is like, okay, cool. Yeah, we're going to be awesome. We're going to fix it. And now they're like, ah, no, we don't want to fix those anymore though because there's a lot of them out there. So then they like stop helping people out. And then they just scrambled to make a new shock. And here it is. So I'm a little bummed with Fox on that.
It sounds like it's going to be cool.
Yeah.
On paper or on screen.
Maybe.
But it's now easier to adjust. Fits more bikes because they turned the reservoirs the other direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's hideous.
And
I just saw the reservoir like where it lives on this bike and Jesus fuck.
I feel like I would hit my calf on that a lot.
I assume you still need special tools to do wipers.
Oh yeah, you can't.
It does say, well, where the fuck
every
is it?
Service
the
is
same,
a full service.
It's the Float X2 has the same air seal package as Float X with a new volume spacer arrangement that allows 1cc steps.
So, not that I wouldn't have owned the X2 from before because they were all exploding. But one more reason to not ever get an X2 is you pretty much can't do your own wiper services. Like, you kind of can, but you need a lot of special tools, and you have to take it way further apart than a regular rear shock, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I've never done it, and I would have to be taught how to do it if I were going to work in a shop regularly.
Yeah, so that's a big... That's a big old negative in my book, but hopefully it's an improvement, and hopefully the reliability is better.
I've rebuilt a lot of them. I just make a label and send it back to Fox. I don't know. I hate to sound like a stick in the mud. I just don't care. Like, it's whatever. I'm sure it's going to be fine, and if it's not fine, people are going to have excuses, and it's whatever. We have listener questions left over.
Okay,
we should talk about that.
No, we can definitely get into that. I mean, unless there's anything new, super compelling to talk about, I'm kind of done on that stuff. I do have a random like shout out and kind of want to get your thoughts on this one. Because so the Radivist, so cycling website, I always knew that it existed, but I just didn't. Maybe I read a few articles on it, didn't really think it much through. But anyway, the tiny shout out I have is I've read a few articles on Radivist recently and started reading some other random stuff on there. And yeah, it's just seems to be a well done website with like actual insightful, proper reviews on things. And like, I can appreciate that. And it has a website that's not ridiculously like ad blasted and hideous, and you can like navigate it. And I want to harken back to a day when people like took pride in their websites of making them like clean. There's like a good archive. You can go back and reference stuff, and it's just useful. So anyway, just wanted to give a shout out to the folks over at Radivist. It sounds like maybe the fella, I don't know the whole story and everybody's names and everything, but it sounds like maybe the Radivist was sold at some point to a big conglomerate, and then it went poorly, and then he bought it back, and it's now under original control. So anyway, any thoughts on Radivist?
Oh yeah, I have a lot of thoughts because John Prolly, that's his name.
Okay.
Prolly. He sold to the Pros Closet.
Oh, he sold.
So
he sold
John.
Oh shit. He sold the Radivist to the Pros Closet.
And the Pros Closet owned the Radivist for a while.
Well, I'm sorry. I did not mean to call you a conglomerate. You're a nice person.
I didn't buy them. I just worked for the people that bought them. And I chatted with him some. And nice dude. At one point, I reached out asking if they were going to get more of a certain product in, because all the Radivist merch was sold through the Pros Closet there for a good while.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I got one at home that was never in inventory. Just give me your address. And he just mailed me a Voliere Radivist jacket. And if we had enough listener support, and like if we had 15 or 100X listeners, I would have ordered a run of those jackets for us because they're just really nice.
That's
yeah,
really
it's
cool.
Like a super lightweight, packable windbreaker.
Should we buy the Radivist?
I think we should.
Would you like to get paid for the next 5 years?
I think it would be a lot longer than that.
10 years.
We should entice John to sit down with us by wiggling a little baggie of mushrooms at him and have him on the show one day.
No, I think that would be cool. But I again, in all seriousness, just a shout out. I like seeing people that have good collected reviews, and I like people that are opinionated. I do. I like to see opinions. I hate seeing all this stupid shill stuff on YouTube and the rest of the internet and the bike world, where it's clearly just the company gives them a statement and basically is over their shoulder while they say that statement on the camera, and then the dude takes the money. And I hate that shit. Like, come
that's
on.
That's fine. I'll give a shout out to my current, well, waiting for me to be able to use a keyboard for an extended amount of time, employer Gear Junkie. They want real people testing gear and ruining it if it's going to get ruined and writing about it. And it doesn't matter if the company gave you the shit to test. You can say exactly what happened with it. I mean, you can't just be a total asshole, but you know, you, gear junkie. Like, if you're looking for real gear reviews and stuff that's actually like tested out in the field, Gear Junkie is a great place.
But yeah.
And I love writing stuff for them and testing stuff, but I haven't been able to do it.
So anyway, that's my shout out to the Radivist. I read a few articles and it seems like he actually has a head on his shoulders, and like, you can tell that he's got experience for a while because he talks about old technologies and like what he likes and what he doesn't like and all that. And I say he, there's probably multiple authors here, but just in general, all the stuff I read on there.
There's a ton of people.
Yeah. All the stuff I read on there I liked, and I like when people have opinions.
And I want to just read the opening paragraph of the Motive Ultimate Brakes. The new SRAM Motive Brake has a bit of everything. The power is similar to a code, the weight is similar to a level, and the fluid is similar to baby oil. But don't put it on your baby. Put it in your bike. Travis did. And although they're not perfect, they're on his bike to stay. I mean, what a great way to like I'm hooked.
Like you can tell when people just start swinging marketing lingo, like I just know it. I can smell it and I stop reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Are we going to do a listener question?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go.
All right. Well, so back when we were really short on content and we were asking people to, just send suggestions in the web form, Lee sent us just a lot of ideas. And I just wanted to pick one out of here since we were, kind of talking about, we were talking about like shock service. And he says, let me just kind of paraphrase here. Okay, so he just said, this is just middle of his list of things that we could talk about. Maybe you every other week or so talk about bike maintenance. Just pick a subject like chains or when to know if your bearings or shocks or forks need serviced, and talk about the best places to find accurate information on how to service things on your bike and how to know if certain things are better left to a reliable bike shop. Like if you have to spend $100 to get the right tools to a job that you're only going to need to do every couple of years, then for sure it's probably not worth trying to DIY. So I think that's interesting. Like we mentioned the Fox X, Float X and X2 being not very user service. When that you need special tools and
the
it's
Float
not.
And the Float X is perfectly serviceable. It's the X2 that is not.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I get my X's mixed up. But yeah, so I think that's, let's just talk suspension service for a second. How often should you service your fork and shock, and should you do it yourself? And where do you find that information? And I will say that for most bike parts, the number one place that you should look is the manufacturer. There are a lot of YouTube dickheads out there who don't know what the fuck they're doing. And they kind of know what they're doing, but they won't take a second to just read through all of the instructions for things like torque specs, what tools you're going to need, it goes on. Like, there's just a lot of bullshit out there. So number one thing is, when you want to service something yourself, the first thing you need to do is go to the manufacturer, go to their website, and look at their service documents. Most of them have made it pretty easy. Fox and RockShox, it's like put your serial number in and it's going to pull up all of the specs for your suspension part. It's going to tell you, it'll give you a service document. If you read through the service document and you're confused, that's probably a good sign that you should take it to a bike shop. But yeah, and then you can just decide on suspension service, Kenny, what do you usually recommend for your customers? Like, I know I normally will tell people, every 100 hours or once a year, you should do at least an air seal service or an air can service on your shock and a fork seal service on your fork. And, beyond that, you're just going to more look at like your riding hours and how hard you're riding to decide when you're going to do like a full damper service on those parts.
Yeah, what I tell people, and again, RockShox can get mad at me, Fox can get mad at me, that's fine. you can go look up what their intervals are. Some of them have changed them over the years, but very roughly speaking, if you're doing your wiper service, so you're in a fork, your lower oil, and your wipers and your foam rings, so it's essentially an oil change, you need to do that at least every 100 hours. And in my opinion, from riding stuff, you know, longer than you probably are supposed to, I don't think you usually have to do damper stuff until you have an issue. That's just my personal opinion. Assuming that you're doing wiper services up until that point, don't do nothing to your fork for 300 hours and then wonder why it doesn't work. That's very, very bad. But if you do your wipers, it's usually going to stop stuff getting deeper into the fork and messing with your damper. Now, can your damper oil degrade and all this and that? Absolutely. And if you are a full-blown DH racer, you get your shit like actually hot, then yeah, you probably want to replace your oil more frequently. But for the most part, for the average user, doing that wiper service is the most important thing you can do. And if you do that every 100 hours, in my experience, I have put up to 300 to 400 hours on a single fork, and I've never done a damper service. I've just done my wiper services, and the thing performs just as good as it did on day one. That's been my experience and most of my friends' experiences, but the manufacturer does say typically whatever your wiper service interval is, double that. That's typically what your damper service is if you want to go by the book.
Right. Yeah, and the damper services aren't, especially on a fork, they're not necessarily that hard to do. They're not difficult.
Some of them can be gnarly, especially if you're going to be replacing seals. If you're just puking out the old oil and putting in new oil and rebleeding it, probably not the end of the world. But if you're doing a full seal kit redo on a damper, it can be gnarly. Like you're going to need shaft clamps like, and all kinds of crazy
stuff. Yeah, I was going to say you need to start to do damper services in general. You need the right size, like the exact size shaft clamp to put in your vise that you have in your shop. If so that's another tool you might not have at home. So there are definitely some things that you need to buy, and if you evaluate how often you would need that stuff. And like damper problems. So just signs of damper problems. You turn either your compression knob or your rebound knob and nothing happens.
Yep.
That's a good sign that your damper needs to be serviced.
Or your lockout's
broken. Four-core shock. Yeah. That too.
Because your lockout is just a giant low-speed compression knob is all that it is.
Right.
So with that said, to do your wiper service, which most people, basically, if you're even thinking about doing this work on your own, you can more than likely handle a lower service. If you're just not mechanically inclined, you don't like messing with that stuff, you don't have the garage space, you don't like tools, you don't want to work on stuff, okay, great, that's not you. But if you are remotely interested, like you're intrigued with adjusting your rear derailleur, for example, or whatever, I think the average person can 100% handle a lower service. You just need some basic tools. You need probably some type of work stand. If you don't have that, it's just not going to be as good of a time. And you just need a set of seal drivers, which are going to be like $30 or $40. You're going to need the proper flat top socket to take off your air cap. But even that, you don't have to do a lower service. You just have to take the Schrader valve out. But it's not a good little tool. It's a good little tool to have that flat top socket. But really just seal drivers. And you're going to need like probably a 10 mil socket, some other minor stuff. That's really it.
You need a torque wrench to put the foot nuts back on your fork.
You probably should have a torque wrench, and you need to clearly have the correct oils. But it's not that bad.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a pretty easy process.
Get the manufacturers, whatever they say for oil. So if it says RockShox 5 weight, don't just go to Napa and pick up 5 weight oil. Get whatever the manufacturer says to get. That's just goes back to my original point. Read the instructions. I know at least with RockShox, it has a list. When you open the PDF, it's like, these are the tools you're going to need. And you should have those tools before you take your fork off of your bike. But, you need to make sure that, you know how to readjust your brake, because you're going to have to take your brake off of your fork. You need to know how to adjust a headset, because you're going to have to put the fork back in the bike and readjust your headset. So just, think through all of it. Look at the list of tools. make sure that you're following what the manufacturer says. And some manufacturers have good videos. I prefer to just read, so I don't look at the videos a lot, but I know SRAM puts a lot into making their service videos. So, you know, you definitely have good support out there for instructions. And yeah, I mean, have at it. Like, read through it and decide, do I want to buy this stuff, if I need to buy anything, and can I do this?
Excellent.
Matt, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, y'all knocked it out of the park. One thing I will say is, y'all like mentioned stands and torque wrenches. Don't buy a toolkit. I am anti-toolkit. And when you look at a bicycle toolkit...
Oh, bicycle toolkits, I think, are really silly. I'm in a total agreeance with you there, because everyone's got a different damn bottom bracket standard and this and that. Like, go buy a really nice set of Allens that you like, and then buy like the really nice Park tool or Abbey tools or whatever. Get that really nice bottom bracket aluminum socket, for example. Get that seal driver kit for your fork. That's way better.
Right. And your fork, you know, when we talk about seal driver size, that seal driver size, that's referring to the diameter of the seal, which is going to match up with the diameter of your fork. So if you have a 32 stanchion fork, and then on your big bike you've got a 38 stanchion fork, you're going to need two different size seal drivers.
Yeah, and that is slightly unfortunate, but that's just the way that it goes. I mean, yeah, my right. I can do basically anything to any bicycle in my garage with tools that I've collected over the years, and I'd bet you that the price tag on all of my bicycle specific tools is probably $500. And I have,
that's about what I had. That's the number I had in my head.
Basically everything. I've got almost every bottom bracket standard, every flat socket fork, you know, deal. I've probably got 6 or 8 of those sockets. I've got every seal driver. I've got, you know, chain tools, cable cutters, a couple other miscellaneous things. It's actually not even that many tools. It's not that big a deal. So I agree. Don't buy that like 150 piece bicycle toolkit, because most of this shit you'll never use.
Well, and you interrupted me, so now I'm going to interrupt you. My big problem with that is what Kenny just said. There's a bunch of shit you'll never use.
It's like got cone wrenches in it. Keep going. I just wanted to bring up one of the parts that would be in there that you're never going to use.
Unless you have formula hubs, and then you'll need cone wrenches. You will.
Yep, yep.
My point is, though, it comes in this nifty little case, and then you're like, oh, I need this bottom bracket tool that didn't come in this case, and it doesn't fit in the fucking case.
That's, yes, I agree, 100%.
So you should go to Harbor Freight. You should pick out a toolbox. Or first thing you should do is what Kenny said. You should buy a nice set of hex wrenches. You should get a nice number 2 Phillips, because some bikes are still going to have Phillips on them, and it's not a bad thing to have. Because once you have tools, you're going to work on other people's stuff too.
And if you want your pants to get tight, go get a JIS screwdriver.
If you're going to be working on Shimano, get a JIS screwdriver. That's correct, but it's not a number 2. And then you need a nice shock pump. You need a pair of parallel pliers in 8-inch. You need a pair of parallel pliers in 4-inch.
Are you talking like a Nipex?
Yeah.
Well, the K is hard. It's cut Nipex. And if you didn't want to spend that money, you can get knockoff ones, which is totally fine for a home mechanic.
Hey, your American ass just called those parallel pliers. I didn't even know what the fuck that was.
What do you mean? I'm sorry, I know the name of the tools that I like.
It's called a parallel plier?
Yeah, because the jaws are parallel at all times.
Well, sure. I just thought they were called Nipex. Like, well, everyone knows what a
Nipex
is.
That's a brand name. That's like calling facial tissues Kleenex.
I don't know what the fuck a facial tissue is. It's a Kleenex.
Well,
all right. So you got yourself a good set of parallel pliers.
But here's where I'm going. If you have a big set, you can use those to grab your cassette lock ring tool. If you have a small set, you can use those to grab an open, like to use them as a nicer than crescent. If you're removing a coaster brake wheel that's got a like an 8 nut on one side and a 5 hex on the other, then you can use your small pair and sneak in there and just squeeze it, and there you go.
If you if you know anybody with a coaster brake, then you need to get new friends.
I changed a flat on a coaster brake at my house today for a friend of mine. She's a very nice lady, and you should go fuck yourself, Kenny.
But yeah, Nip-X pliers are dope for sure, and I'm going to continue to call them Nip-X. You can call them Knip-X. That's fine.
I think you should get a Stans valve core tool. But now I'm going to go down the rabbit hole of the things you don't need to spend a lot of money on. I don't think you should buy Knip-X brand parallel pliers. I think you can save money buying something else.
Can you buy Hongdong Knip-X?
Sure you can.
Oh, I'm going to look them up right now. Let's see. Hongdong.
And by the way, Lee's email address, part of it is Bad Wrench. I won't say the rest of it on air, but Lee, maybe if you're a bad wrench, you shouldn't be servicing your fork. I don't know. All right. We've been recording for a while.
I'm going to go down the rabbit hole of what you don't need to spend a lot of money on really quick, which is you don't need to buy the Wheels Manufacturing or the Enduro bearing presses. You just straight up don't. Those are really expensive, and they are shop-ish quality. We did stretch the threads on the main rod of our Wheels Manufacturing one and had to order replacement rods for it. But you can get, like, if you're at home and you're like, oh, I need to change this bearing, I'm just going to drive it in with a socket, either take it to the bike shop and pay them to put the new hub bearings in your bike, or buy the $43 bicycle bearing press set for wheel hub bearing installation.
I'm going to say something a little crazy here. I'm all about having a go buy the drift set or whatever you need, the proper aluminum deal for your hub if you know you're going to be replacing the bearings, I guess. But it ain't cheap. And I'm going to say I've gotten really, really far in life using freaking sockets. If you're not a dumbass, you can get a lot done with a set of sockets. Should a shop be doing that? Probably not. But
we did it outdoors because they didn't have bearing drifts.
Exactly. And we have to do it from time to time at our shop. And we are a big shop because sometimes you get into a situation where you don't have the right thing or it doesn't work or some idiot, you know, messed it up. So I don't know. If you're not a moron, I mean, I would say that for the average person, probably easier to do a wiper service on a fork than replace your average set of cartridge bearings in a hub. Because there's a lot of stuff you can fuck up doing pressing bearings in if you have no idea what you're doing. However, if you're not a moron, you can get a lot done with some sockets. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm saying, though, that now you can buy them for $42 on Amazon.
Got it.
Yeah, and that's going to take care of your home. And that is one thing that, you know, it comes with like a foam padded case. And that's pretty important because those drifts can definitely run off if you just leave them laying around.
Well, but also that's something that you're not going to add to. That's going to be an addendum to your work case.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the work case itself. And the other thing that you should buy from Amazon is Presta valve cores, because they always are full of sealant and they suck. And you can get a 20-piece set of valve cores with a tool for $9 on Amazon. Like,
yeah, you go to refill your tire and the air is not flowing in very well, or you go to let some air out and it's just barely coming out or not coming out at all. Just pop one of those fuckers in there and you're good to go.
And the thing is, it seems daunting at the start, but if you were to get, again, those tools we've mentioned, you had some valve cores, you had some sealant, you had chain lube. And the other thing to consider for at home is, and you don't have to do this all in one paycheck, but when you're buying brake pads, buy an extra pair and just have them on hand. I mean, maybe you're not in a situation like me where it's an hour almost round trip to touch brake pads at a store, but having brake pads at home is awesome because I can just, if I'm in that situation where I know I need to put them in, I'm in the mindset where I don't want to put them in, I can put them in. And it's just nice.
That's just a general life lesson, though, I would say in general. If I go to AutoZone or NAPA or wherever, I'm getting stuff to do an oil change. I'm not going to get a kit to do one oil change. I'm going to buy two or three. That's just me.
Yeah.
Because I'm already there. Like, come on.
Oh, and Matt mentioned wheel bearing drifts and stuff. Like, you know when to replace your bearings, because you can, on most, not all, but on most modern hubs, you can take your wheel out, pop an end cap off, and...
Well, before you even take the wheel out of the bike, you can spin it.
Well, yeah.
Can you hear it? If you can, that's bad.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, I mean, it's super that's easy,
step
too.
Step one is,
I can give you a little
you
trick.
Can you hear your bearings, you know, make noise, like dry bearing noise in your bike? Yeah, you need to replace them. But if you have your wheel out of your bike and you pop an end cap off, sometimes the axle is pressed in and you can't take the axle out, but you can just put your hand on the axle and just spin it with your fingers. And if it feels smooth, there should be a little bit of resistance there. That means there is grease inside of your bearing. If it just spins freely, like there's just nothing there except for, like, I don't know, fairy dust and hopes and dreams, you need new bearings. Or if it makes noise, or if it feels rough. But if it just feels smooth with a little bit of grease resistance, then you're good.
And I've got a trick for Talon. You don't even need to take your, you don't need to touch your bike or take your wheel out or anything. If it's got,
don't
that,
say it.
If it's got that little Industry 9 logo on it and you've had your bike for more than a month, your bearings are ruined. So go fix them. And same thing, if you've got a set of really nice Control SL wheels with some DT180 hubs in it, yeah, those are ruined too.
And some companies sell wheel bearing kits, and that is the easiest way to get all of the stuff, the bearings that you need. Some wheels will require special tools. And again, look at your manufacturer's instructions. If they say all the tools you need are a bearing press and a slide hammer, then you use the slide hammer to take the old bearings out, use the bearing press to put new bearings in, then you're good to go. But if it is a DT180 hub, they've got some special shit they want you to use. So,
Jesus Christ.
What?
I just went down a rabbit hole and I'm like, man, I wonder if there's watermelon Gatorade. There's watermelon pre-workout caffeine Gatorade.
Yeah. It's probably full of sucralose too.
Let's find out.
Because some people think that you don't need sugar when you're doing exercise. Yeah, it says sugar-free focus amino.
Oh, fuck me.
Yeah. But yeah, that's just a little tool talk. I think that covers, I don't know, I think a lot of it. But you guys ready to wrap it up?
Yep, we can shut it down.
Yeah, there's more to his question, but we can just kind of pick through it whenever we want to talk, because he's got some really good things to discuss. All right, I'm going to read our patrons at $10 a month or more. So at $10 a month, we've got Zozo. Clayton, Wendy's nuggets taste like they came out of her ass. Tom P. bleaches his stink wrinkle. Tom's P. Timothy, Ty Lover, Ty, Tennessee Zach, Taylor Zwift, Taper Bore Pro, Skunk in Your Trap, Samuel, Ryan, Ride Time Extended,
Pork Chop Sandwiches,
Noah, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Matt's Formerly Pretty Hands, R.I.P. Leland, Josh, JC, Jared, Jake D., I'm a hand model, mama, a finger jockey. We're a different breed. Holden, Two Dicks. Green Giant, Gordon. Fuck Bike Rumors, Shitty Website. Frank the Tank, Eric, Captain Fickle, Captain Beefheart, Cam Irish One, Bill, Bearded Bag O' Dicks, Barrel O' Dicks, Anus, Anus, Balls, Anus. Oh, I messed that up. It doesn't matter. AJ, Aaron, underscore. At $11.11 per month, we've got Brought to You By, Taking Gabapentin and Benadryl to See the Hat Man. At $14 Australian, we've got Patamelon Disco. And at, we don't have Deacon on here. Sorry. $20 a month, we've got Scott, Poop Wrench, My Neck, My Back, Lick My Pussy, and My Crack. Joe, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors, Put My Thing Down, Flip It, and Reverse It at 50. All right, everyone. It's been another wonderful episode of the Just Riding Along show. You guys ready to shut it down?
Shut it down.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.